Jacob Cass is a brand designer, strategist, and founder of Just Creative, an award-winning brand design consultancy. He has worked with name brands like Nike, Red Bull, Disney, and Nintendo. He's even responsible for creating the logo for San Francisco, which is quite impressive, and he's now focusing on bringing his global brand experience to smaller businesses. I would like to introduce my dear friend, Jacob Cass. Hey,
dude,
those guns, he almost knocked out the mic, but that's cool. Bro, welcome, man. I think I'm truly excited to dive into this episode because you and I both have had our successes in this industry. And we just have a different approach. And you and I were just chatting about like the dynamic, how dynamic our industry is. And there's no right or wrong path. There's so many ways into what we do, right? Because even if you break down branding, you've got design, you've got strategy, you've got marketing, you've got, you know, even agencies that are purely built around how to name a company, right? Mm-hmm. So there's so many facets. And I think what's interesting is you and I have taken wildly different approaches, but we have the same kind of ethos or methodology on how we kind of see things. But I really just wanted to highlight, dude, your journey is remarkable, what you've been able to accomplish in such a short period of time. And I really just wanted to dive deeper into how you kind of got into the creative space and what you made of it. And we could kind of jam back and forth to give people a bit of an insight as to, yeah, what it's like in our industry and how there's no necessarily one way in to what we do.
Sounds good. Where do we start? That's a lot.
Dude, for you, I think it's like, well, I know you were studying visual communication.
Yes.
And for those that don't know what that is, like what is visual communication and how do you study such a topic?
Yeah. So taking it back to uni days, visual communication was a major that you could choose. And then you'd choose a minor like graphic design or illustration. Right. So that's just how it was structured back then. But basically it's how do you communicate visually? So, you know, fonts, colors, type, you know, imagery, and so forth. So that's part of the degree. And that was like the foundation of my education. Mm. And that was a 3-year degree. And, you know, we can talk more after that, but that's my traditional education.
Right. Do you know if it's still the same kind of hierarchy today? If I went to university today,
or I have no bloody idea.
Well,
so long ago.
For those listening, yeah, you'll have to look it up. But for you, man, like how would you separate? Okay. So when I talk to, you know, business owners or what have you, I think they kind of lump graphic design as this one thing. Like how would you break visual communication outside of, like how would you separate the two if you had to?
Separate it, visual communication from
graphic design.
From graphic design.
Yeah.
Well, they're one and the same thing in my eyes. Mm. So graphic design is like a umbrella, if you will.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you even look at the name of the degree. It's like visual communication, and then you could have subsets of that. So
right,
it could be illustration or it could be graphic design or art.
Would you say that like if you look out there, you know, people might say, well, I use Canva or I use, like people can kind of self-teach graphic design just through like, you know, opening a platform and messing with some things. What layers would you say that visual communication add to it? Is it like a bit of the psychology behind how to get a certain reaction, or is there any deeper science to that you studied for those 3 years?
Yeah, if you break it further down, so some of the most important aspects is typography and the principles of design, color. So if you learn about each of those topics, you become a better designer.
Yeah.
So it's the cross-section of those skills that really make you a better designer.
Yeah. And in those 3 years, like what were some of the big things that were like moments for you or like really fun or exciting discoveries throughout that study?
I was a big self-learner. I was so passionate about design. I was just learning everywhere I could, you know, books and online. And even before I started uni, I was like learning about design.
Yeah.
I was doing web design on the side. In contrast with, you know, my own learning, the education at university was also a little bit behind in the digital space. So
right,
some of our classes were like, go to this website, follow this tutorial, where like you're paying big bucks for this education where you're like being told to go somewhere else. And that's right, because the teachers, they're not up to speed with that, you know, the fast paced action of, you know, the web, for example. But other aspects like typography is tried and true. You know, you have very good teachers and that really helped.
Okay.
Yep.
So what's something that surprised you about type that maybe you didn't quite self-teach, but you were like learning throughout, you know, the academia field of typography and what was taught in those classrooms?
Well, type is a huge part of visual communication.
Yeah.
And the more you know about it, the better you can communicate. So, you know, what does this typeface say? What does this one say? And as an example of that, it's like I think you just shared this recently. It's like, you will always be mine, and it's written in blood.
Yeah.
And it has like drips coming down from it. Or if you've written it in like a nice, lovely script typeface, it's like it can communicate love, not like hate.
Yeah. So you could literally have the same subject matter, change the font, and it completely changes how the message feels. The message.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, yeah, it comes down to messaging.
Would you kind of say, like, the way I guess I look at typography, and I mean, you know, similar to you, I love like self-teaching as well as like kind of diving into like old textbooks and stuff. But like, yeah, when you look at like selecting a typeface, for example, it carries like a tone with it, like an angry tone or a happy tone or a playful tone. And it adds a different amount of depth and personality to what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Personality, or another word is attribute. So what attributes do you want to communicate? So if you can define, let's say, your brand or the design piece that you're designing, what attributes do you want it to say? What's the personality of it?
Yeah. Are there some like fundamentals that you try to stick to with what you currently do today when it comes to type?
Well, you have to understand what you're communicating. That's the most important thing. What is the brief? Who is it for? What message do I want to send? And that can allow you to pick the right typeface.
Yeah. And what I love about your story, man, is you, as I understand, you got poached to go work for Disney overseas in the midst of your study.
Yeah. Well, yes. Kind of. I was studying. I got headhunted by an agency. It wasn't Disney. It was for an agency who had a client that was Disney.
Yeah.
Semantics. Anyway.
That's still cool. Yeah.
So I was studying, but at the same time, I was blogging and sharing my studies. And so I was putting everything I was doing at university online. And I was big into social media at the time, like an early adopter.
What year was this?
Good question.
Yeah. If you had to guess.
Probably like a year or two after Twitter came out. So if you want to look that up, you can.
Let's figure that. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yep.
And so you were kind of teaching as you were learning.
I wasn't teaching, I was sharing.
Sharing what you learned.
I guess it was teaching in a way, but it was sharing my process and my studies. So for example, if it was like a billboard project, I'd share my process of how I chose the right message, what imagery I used, and shared some tips on how to create a right billboard design. You know, it had to be short messaging, it had to be big, bold type, because you have 1 or 2 seconds to communicate an idea. You know, people are going fast. So those sorts of tips I was sharing online.
Yeah.
And I was sharing through social media as well. Blogging was a kind of different game back then, but it was a pretty tight-knit community.
Yep.
And that's how I got exposure, was through social and my blog. Okay. So this digital agency was starting up in New York. They were kind of a startup. I think there was 5 or 6 employees when I moved there. And yeah, I got the attention of them because I was, you know, an early adopter into social media, and I was very much into digital UI, UX, websites. And yeah, they tweeted to me saying, yeah, we want to offer you a job. Let's talk. So we got on the phone. I had 6 months to go to graduate. They said, that's fine. And then I moved over to New York and stayed there for about 5 years.
Yeah. So Twitter's release date was 2006. So this is around 2008.
Yep. That's
right. Okay. Yeah. And you were predominantly doing this on Twitter? Like, was that your main platform?
No, the main platform was Just Creative. That was my blog and website. That's my business even today.
Right. So, and how were you getting people onto the website? Was that through social media?
Through search and commenting on other blogs. So blogging back then was a little bit different, where like it was very tight knit and there weren't many bloggers per se. So it was quite, like, everyone knew each other.
Right.
There was only a small handful.
That's so weird to say that these days. Because there's so many blogs out there. It's like, how did you know everyone?
Yep.
So what kind of inspired you to even, you know, decide that you wanted to share what you were learning and those tips?
Good question. I don't know. I think I was learning from other blogs.
Okay.
And I'm like, I want a blog. And then there was some blogs starting up. It's like, how to make money from blogs. And I was like, that got my interest. And then, you know, you learn that you share content and, you know, people can interact and engage with it, and you interact and engage with others, and you learn and you get traffic to your site, and that can get you exposure for work. So it was a slow building process, but it was through that learning process about blogging and sharing my work and building an audience in those early days that kind of like elevated my business. And that has been the backbone of my business since then.
Wow. So you actually, like, when you started the blog, did you see it as a business? Like, what was your perception of what you were doing?
It wasn't a business. It was only like a year or two later that I learned about blogging as like a, you know, an income source,
right,
and how to monetize and how to use it as a, you know, traffic source and to get clients and so forth.
So you were doing it purely out of passion and creativity.
It was at the time. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And like for you, like what was the reward for you? Cause I always think it's interesting the psychology people have of like why they produce content. Like, you know, you and I have this conversation all the time where we're talking to people in business and we're like, why do you want to make content? Like to get leads and make money. It's like, well, hang on a second. Like you got to have a little bit of something else in there. You know what I mean? What was that for you?
For me, it was a passion for design and creativity. I was just naturally drawn to creative subjects and design. So it was in my bones. It still is. So for me, it's always been there. I don't think much has changed. It's that it's just more competitive. There's so much content out there. Yeah. And yeah, it can, the algorithms are, they're bubbling up certain content that, I don't know, it's not what you always want to see. Like, you know,
right.
So it's, yeah, it's changing.
I would agree with you. So like, I don't think I've even told you about this, but like when I was 13, I used to be in like an online gaming forum community where we would like play video games what together. Game? I played a lot of stuff. Okay. So Command & Conquer Generals.
Oh yeah.
Loved like StarCraft and like those strategic games.
Warcraft.
Yeah. Warcraft, okay. StarCraft, like anything top down, like Red Alert, Command & Conquer Generals. Okay. I loved like controlling a lot of things all at once and getting my macros down for anyone who knows what that means. But yeah, so between, because back then, dude, when I was like 13, I don't even know what year this was. It was like the early 2000s or whatever. You know, video game servers would crash. So then the whole community would go on forums and they would just rant and rage and like, you know, it would kind of build this online community. But back then you didn't have like social media. Social media was kind of, I don't know, for me, that the kick you get out of social media was like on a forum. Which is
the
a
community. It's like the community.
Yeah, it's an online community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like an ancient Discord. Yes. If you kind of look at it, right? So it's like you would post and then like your post could get like tagged or replied to. And then it was just like, it would create like, you would create a thread with a topic and then you get it, right? Like if anyone goes on Reddit, it's still kind of, the concepts are still there. But like, I remember like I used to write reviews of video games. So I'd download a game, PC oriented, and then I would play it for a month and then I'd write a review. But back then when you would write a blog, you weren't thinking about SEO. You weren't thinking about searchability. You were just literally writing something for a community and hoping that they would enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
For little to no reward.
Yep. No, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But it's once you learn how to monetize that, how to make it useful for your business as well, that's where it gets really interesting. It's like, well, how do you make it useful for yourself, but also others? And it's that combo that really makes it effective.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point. And I think back to your story, right? So you're studying and you're sharing this content through the online blog community, which you knew everyone back then.
Yep.
Did you know Seth Godin or any of these like characters back then, man?
Not close, no.
But he was out there doing his
Debbie
thing.
Debbie Millman and Seth were up there.
Who was like the early killers of like blog writing for you back then that you looked up to?
So these are like designers I'm talking about, design. Yeah. So there's only a small handful of design blogs. And you know, there was Dig back then and, you know, Design Float, and there was, you know, a bunch of smaller freelancers that have had blogs. Right. So it was very like independent and very authentic and very real. And the engagement all happened in the comment section of blogs.
Yeah.
So that's how, you know, you got to know each other and you just all like shared.
Yeah. And that for you, was that like, because I guess you didn't have Udemy or Skillshare or that kind of stuff. No. That was a way you could pick up tricks and insights from others?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. There was hardly any information. There was no courses. It's such a weird thing to think about. There's like no courses.
It's not even that long ago, man. We're talking like, you know, what? Like
2008, 2010.
Jeez, man. Yeah. It's not even that, 14 years ago, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. There was none of that. It was information articles pretty much, no courses or anything like that.
Yeah, and you weren't trying to like get your keywords right and all the rest of it. You're just like literally.
Well, that was the start of it.
So when was that? Like 2008 when
that started? 2008. That's when I started learning about blogging and SEO and how to get found in Google and so forth.
Yep. And that's how you started to get that initial wave of attention.
Yep.
And that's how the agency found you.
Yes. And I was going to, didn't share this before, but because I was big on Twitter, I actually got onto the front page of my newspaper, the Newcastle Herald, and it said Jacob, our top twit, and that was my claim to fame.
You're like, the whole town knows who I am. Yes, look at me go.
Yeah, so yeah. I was one of the top in Australia behind the Prime Minister at the time. So yeah, it was.
Wow. And you're up there stealing the attention from politics.
That's a nice claim to fame.
What a twit.
Top twit. Yeah,
top twit. I love that, man. Okay, so then you move overseas almost immediately.
Yes, so I finished.
So they'll let you finish your degree and then you...
Yep. Flew over there and started working for the big brands and, you know, I was working for Disney and Nike and Then even Jerry Seinfeld was a big project over there working on.
I saw that the other day, man. I didn't even know that. I was going through your Instagram and I was like, you designed the Jerry Seinfeld logo for his podcast?
For his show, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. So it's it was a web series and now it's on Netflix.
Sorry, man. I'm calling it a podcast. Yeah, I get what you're saying. So, dude, that's wild. I want to dive back into that. But like when you moved overseas, what was it like from you going from study through to overseas agency life? Like what was that like for you?
Well, it was a huge catapult, right? It was like a total shift. I didn't know anyone in New York. I only found a place to stay that the day before I flew out over there. So it was like crazy.
That's terrible. How old were you?
I just finished uni. So like 18, 19.
I guess. Man. Okay. Yeah. So you're 18, 19. Did you feel like a bit of a big
shot?
No,
I'd be older than that. I'd be probably 20.
Early 20s.
Like when you're at uni, you're like, I hope I get a job, you know? And then all of a sudden you get poached like mid-study.
Yeah. I was like, yes, you sign me up.
Dude, take me through that, man. How did you feel? Like, was that a nice boost to your ego? Like, did it feel like exhilarating?
It didn't feel weird. And there was a lot of paperwork and a lot of like shit that you didn't really want to deal with, like with visas and everything. But, and it was pretty scary, right? Like, I didn't know a thing about New York and didn't have anywhere to stay. I didn't know anyone. So it was a huge shift, but a huge catapult as well. So, it was so rewarding. And I do have a story about getting kicked out of the US as well.
Whoa.
So after those 6 months, the same company that hired me said they don't need me any longer.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So it was this like roller coaster of like emotions and got kicked out and had to go home to Australia. I found a job in the 2 weeks that they gave me to leave.
Yeah.
But I still had to go home to Australia, get a different type of visa and come back.
Yeah.
So
just so I can understand. So the journey was, headhunted, moved overseas, worked there for 6 months.
Yep.
And that's in that period, that's when you were working with Disney and San Francisco. And
So San Francisco was a bit later.
Okay, but Jerry Seinfeld.
A bit later. So that's the later. First 6 months was like Disney and Nike. Disney was our biggest one.
Wow.
But 6 months later, I had a review and they're like, no, we actually don't need you anymore. Like,
God damn it.
I just signed a lease. I was going to move in with my wife and like, I was not going home.
Whoa, you were 18, 19, you had a wife?
Well, my wife now, so not.
Okay, but dude, you're like I'm building my whole plan in like 1 year, bro.
No.
Okay, so you were overseas and then like, before you get to the, I guess, coming back to Australia, like what was it like going into agency life for the first time?
I've never been in agency life. Yeah. I've never worked for someone else. So I've done a few jobs here and there through uni, just on the side. And I didn't know what to expect.
Okay.
I landed to an awesome agency. They were working with some cool clients and it was amazing. And that's why I didn't want to leave. So I went home to Australia, saw a lawyer, tried to figure out how I could get back, figured it out. I qualified for a certain visa just because I'd graduated within a year.
Okay.
I qualified for this certain J-1 visa it was called.
Yeah.
I went back there to go searching for a job.
Okay.
And I found one and it was like a recruiting agency and I went between a couple of different places to find the one that I wanted to stay at. Then I found one which I stayed at for 4 years.
Wow, cool.
So that's when I started working with Nintendo, Jerry Seinfeld, Coca-Cola, Powerade, like all these cool brands that I was like, this is the jackpot. So I just stayed there for, that time. But through that time, I was also running my agency, Just Creative. Well, it was like moonlighting, if you will.
Okay, so you were doing a bit of like...
Both.
Geez, man. Candle. So you were keeping Just Creative burning the whole time through all of this.
Yeah, the whole time. It's always been that.
And getting like jobs in between, working moonlight, working in the weekends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So for you, like, I guess like, I think a lot of people that are considering agency life, like what would you say that they could expect, and if you were to play comparisons about the two different companies you worked with, like what was your experience overall?
So I've worked in-house and I've worked in agencies and I've worked freelance.
Yeah.
My advice for anyone coming out of like uni or studying would be to work for an agency because you get to tap into the minds of people smarter than you and you get to understand how agency works, the processes, even strategy. You get to work with team members and you learn much faster.
Right.
I'm not saying this is the only way, but for me, that's how I like learned so much. And if you just go straight from uni to freelancing, it can be more challenging to learn the ins and outs of running an agency and business and so forth.
Yeah. And we find that here, like when people come on board that have like wonderful portfolios and they've only freelanced post, graduating, it is a bit of a shell shock. Like the sheer speed that we work at, how difficult some of the thought processes are to the strategy and all the rest of it. But like, how would you say, like, what were the maybe the top skills that you picked up throughout working within agencies? Like, what are the main skill sets you kind of get to walk away with?
Project management and managing your time between different projects.
Yeah.
Because agency life, or anyone that's worked in them, knows that you're working on multiple brands at a time. So you shift in between them. So you have to be adaptable and flexible and work within timelines. So
the client doesn't make a payment, they pause the project, they change something. You're like, so it does feel a little crazy sometimes.
It does. So you one second you're on finance, the next one you're on like working with Nintendo, and it's like gaming. It's like,
how do I switch my head, right? Because it'll be weird, because I think like even here, like, one second, you know, our designer will be working on a law firm, and then it'll be like, you know, a delicious chocolate FMCG brand, and then they're switching back into like, you know, a doggy daycare center, and then back up to like a politician. It's like, what's happening? You know, so, and you have to kind of change hats, because when you're in a creative project, would you say you really have to kind of channel that, you know, that energy? Like, you got to find that sweet spot, and then breaking that kind of sucks.
Yeah, definitely. If you're not in flow, it can, you know, and you have distractions and you're swapping between things, I don't think you get peak productivity or creativity,
right?
Because you're just not focused enough.
Yeah.
So thankfully the agency gave us that, you know, you could work on this for the day and then you do that to the next day, or maybe in the afternoon you work on like a few smaller things, but you do get that time to focus on the project.
And when you were there, like, I guess if you were to say, okay, during the period of a week, would you say you were a junior in the second job, or were you midway by this point?
I was junior. As soon as I left uni, I was junior.
Yeah.
And then I moved into as an interactive designer. That was my title.
Right.
So I was doing UI, UX, and also doing that, kind of moved into a bit of branding and then advertising as well. So the agency did everything from digital to print. They even did the Powerade logo and bottle design. So like they did a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Did you have something that you were really attracted to? Because I noticed some designers here are like more illustrative, or they like logo design, or they like UX UI. Like were you really attracted to as a designer?
So in uni it was logo design
and
identity and brand in general.
Okay.
But I was also self-taught UI designer, and that kind of got me into UX as well. So you know, for the first job, I was like a junior interactive designer. So I was doing everything in the digital space.
Mm.
Interactive just means, I guess, what today people would call digital designer. So it's like, it was Facebook apps. It was social media graphics. It was anything in that digital realm.
Yeah. So, I like the word interactive. I feel like I've not really heard that. I only ever hear like UX, UI, you know, app design or like things like that. So
yeah, it's pretty broad.
Yeah, it's a cool term, but I've never really seen it used. And for you, okay, so like when did you feel like you started to become like a bit of a midway, throwing your weight around in the industry a little bit?
It was probably at the time, like the second job in New York, where I kind of leveled up. Like I was definitely advanced in terms of UI, UX and websites, but the branding space, you know, there's so much to brand. Mm-hmm. And I was very much focused on logos and identity design.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my world. So like when I was running Just Creative, that's what I focused on. But at work, I did UI, UX. So it's kind of building my skills in brand, web and identity.
Yeah.
And, you know, as my career went on, then I kind of got into strategy, then I learned more about brand, and the rabbit hole goes deep.
No, so. I love that, man. And okay, so a question I have for you, because I always love, this is like a personal thing I love to kind of understand, is like everyone's logo creation process. Because you think about it, like if for the uneducated, they would just go, it's just a logo design, but every graphic designer kind of has their way of doing it. Like what's your method to summon creative ideas for, you know, logo design?
Well, let's say 10 years ago, it was a little different to what I do now. I take a more of a holistic approach when it comes to brand now, where I help the client with everything from strategy to launch. So strategy, design, and then, you know, the growth phase. So that's a little bit different to how I did it for probably the first 5-8 years of my career, where I had like a questionnaire that I'd send people, and I didn't even really talk to the client, which is pretty poor.
I remember you told me this. Yeah. You sent like a questionnaire and waited to email it back, and that removes a bit of the energy exchange.
Yes.
For ideas.
In hindsight, it was a terrible thing to do, but I was fully booked for a long time during this method, and that was through search and SEO, and I was traveling at the time as well.
Yeah.
And it was, I'd send them a form asking about their business, who their customer was, what personality they wanted the brand, you know, if they had any taglines or anything like that. And to be honest, I didn't go deep enough into their business. And now I try to understand the business problems and understand who the customer is. I look at the marketplace, seeing who they're up against. And that helps form the brief for the logo design. And once I have the brief, then I can go off and do some more research. I can sketch, can bring the designs into, you know, Illustrator or online or the computer, and then refine them, explore type, and then send them the, you know, designs, often in combination with mock-ups and how the logo plays out with the full identity and the brand.
Yeah.
And also how it stands out against their competitors as well.
Yeah. So when you're creating, and let's just say let's just say you're pitching a logo concept to a potential client, you were initially doing a Q&A virtually. What do you do now? Like, do you get on a Zoom call and like kind of sit with them and just go through the same questionnaire process, but with different questions? Like, yeah. Excuse me. That's okay.
All right. So the process I follow now is I have a discovery call with them. So I ask what they're trying to do with their business, who are they trying to serve, and try to figure out what pieces are missing, trying to get to the root cause of what they're doing. You know, what is the brand they're building? So it is more of it's a deeper kind of experience, discovery experience.
Yeah.
And that allows us to put a more solid brief together.
Yeah.
And yeah, I go through a workshop with them, trying to understand their offers, you know, who they are as a company, who the customer is, and who they, you know, how they stand out how they should be standing out in the marketplace. So trying to get all this information, trying to find an insight to help form the right position for the brand. And from that, we can help form the story and the messaging, and that helps inform the identity, which includes things like the logos, fonts, colors, and that will help dictate the marketing material.
Yeah.
So it's a much larger process.
No, we have a very similar process. And I think, you know, like the fun thing, I think, is like also trying to figure out like who's the kind of the person you're dealing with. Do you try to get into the mind of the person in front of you and try to think about how does this person think? What do they seem to care about? Like, what's your process of trying to, I guess, diagnose or analyze the person in front of you and how you're going to work with them?
Yep.
Do you adapt that or is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Adapt. So when I have a discovery call, I ask them if they prefer writing or if they prefer workshops. Some people like a list of questions that they can fill out. Often I'll let them do that and then we'll have a workshop. Sometimes they just want to jump straight in, have a conversation, get things down. So it really depends.
Some I like that. So you get them to, give them a bit of an option at the beginning. Like, how do you like to work? What's more comfortable for you? And I think that's so important as well with our industry, is like trying to make sure that, I think sometimes like maybe early on stage, like designers, they're maybe a little too rigid. And I think it's so important to like, almost like think about yourself as a facilitator of the client. You're trying to make them feel comfortable and you're trying to earn trust essentially. So they feel more inclined and want to listen to your ideas.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I was very rigid for those 8 years. So like questionnaire, here's your work.
You don't like it? Yeah. Well, too bad. You already paid me, you know? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. What's probably like the weirdest concept you've come up with as a logo that surprised you that it maybe it worked or the client?
The weirdest concept.
Yeah.
Wow. I'll have to think about that one.
We'll come back to that one.
Yeah.
Cool.
So there's certainly a lot that have been denied or haven't presented. They're weird. So, yeah.
Do you have a logo that you're like, man, I wish I got that across the line. I was on it.
Yeah. There was one for an airline in Brazil or somewhere in South America that it nearly got there and was going to be like on a fleet of airlines and it just didn't make it across the line. So I was very early in my career. So ever since then, I want to get my work on onto an airplane.
So okay. That's like a redemption project.
Yes.
Oh, I love that, man. I got to get me one of those. Okay, cool. I love that. There's definitely been concepts where I'm like, nah, the client's wrong. They should have listened to me. Where do you think the line is with the clients maybe being very stern on what they want, but you kind of know that there's maybe a better option for them? Like, how do you navigate the line between, I think this is best for you versus the client's just definitely hellbent on how they want it done?
Yeah, it's never about I think this. It's always about the brief. Mm. So it's the language we choose and doing the upfront work. So if you have a solid brief and you're approved on that and, you know, these are the attributes that we want to communicate and, you know, here's some things we don't want and here are some things that we'd like to lead towards, and we can always refer back to that. And we ask the question, is this right for the brand? Is this right for the customer? Does it connect with them? It's not about the subjective opinions of me or you. It's what's right for the brand.
I love that. So you try to really anchor the decision-making process with the client to think about, hey, this is your knee-jerk reaction. What do you think the customer's knee-jerk reaction is going to be?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It removes any subjectivity out of it.
How do you frame that? Because I think sometimes clients can get a little not always, but like sometimes it can be difficult for them to slip into the mindset of the customer. Do you have any techniques or methods or questions you try to use to help them think the way that their customer might think?
Well, yeah, there's a number of things. So you can look at the category first, just mm-hmm. to see, like, you know, are there some things that are, you know, typical for this category? Should we be shying away from that? Should we be differentiating ourselves, but still maintain the familiarity of it?
Right.
And also coming back to the brief again, it's like, is it ticking these boxes? What isn't working here? Trying to define or understand what they're not feeling, to try to, like, you know, fix that.
Right.
Or understand, you know, what they're saying.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I guess to recap for people is like you interview them, whether they start with writing or you workshop it together, you consolidate a brief. Do you check the brief with them before you dive into the creative process just to make sure, like, hey, this is the brief the way we understand it. Are you sure?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then when they approve it, then you dive in. Have you had it happen often where you come back and they change the brief?
Yeah. Or the brief it's in progress. So I'm working with a client right now that they're working on the strategy and the identity and the logo, like, all backwards. So they're like,
we've had a few of those. Yeah.
So that's the reality sometimes.
You got to do it, man. Yeah. It's a part of the game. Yeah.
And then you do something, it's like, oh, it's not right. And we're still working on ourselves. So it's like, well, you haven't got your attributes right. So how are we going to nail this? But it's like, it's just exploration at this stage. And they're like, they may get ideas from this and you may change it down the track, but yeah, it's those projects can be more challenging.
Yeah, I agree with you. And for those that maybe aren't in our industry, what we're talking about here is, I think we would agree with this. The first stage should always be kind of like a meet and greet, get to know each other, then a workshop so we can really understand the attributes, the point, the purpose, the why, the target audience. Like, we've got to kind of get that stuff out of the way before we go into visual design. But even like when you finish the workshop, you have to consolidate the data and make sure that the brief is correct. Yes. And the problem is if you bypass all of that and go straight into design, you end up with a bit of backlash sometimes because you could show design, they might like it, but then you discover the attributes are different. Then you got to come back to design again. Yep. So it can get a little tricky, right?
Yeah, it can. Yeah. And you have to go back to the drawing board and it's a waste of time. So, like, just do it right from the beginning.
Come on. Or just pay us a lot of money to do that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I guess, like, sometimes it has happened where we've gone straight into design. We've nailed it. We've come back to the attributes. And then sometimes you can kind of wriggle the attributes to fit. Do you like doing that? Or do you prefer to kind of, like, really play the organic game of, like, we've got to make sure the attributes are correct?
I think in the beginning there is like a general idea.
Yeah.
So there's a general path to follow, like a bucket or, you know, that you could put your designs in, if you will. So it's like meant to be clean or it's meant to be funky or whatever. Like, you have one word that's kind of like the general vibe.
Yeah.
But then you can fine tune it and, you know, build upon it and iterate. And that's part of the process.
What are the things that you look for in that process that give you the most inspiration for design cues? Like, how do you translate from strategy into color, into font, into those things? Do you try to accumulate them to like one or two attributes? Like, how do you draw inspiration to pivot from strategy into identity design?
Well, that's where the magic happens.
Hey, I want to know your secrets, man. Yeah.
It's a number of things. You have to understand the marketplace, you know, who you're up against. So you always do your research and like, well, here's what the others are doing. Like, how are we going to differentiate ourselves? So
like, all the law firms out there are serious and they use Navy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes like, they do that for a certain reason. So you don't want to go out there and be like, you know, like look like a playground, for example. It's like there's certain attributes that a law firm may have to have. So it's understanding those basic principles.
Like in a courtroom, you can't be silly and you can't be too jovial or too playful or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you have to know those general boundaries.
Yeah.
And then you can go outside those boundaries a little bit to differentiate from others.
Yeah.
So, but you have to understand who you're up against and the category.
Yeah.
Then you're looking at, you know, who your customer is and how you're going to connect with them. Mm. You know, there's so many different ways to position a brand. So you have to understand what your position is and what you want to be remembered for.
Yeah.
And then you can come back to, you know, all your design principles that we spoke about. So how does this typeface communicate that? Let's say it's professional and, you know, modern and luxurious. Like, what typeface communicates that?
Yeah. You're not going to pick like a Comic Sans or like a, you know, papyrus or anything like that. Have you seen that funny video with who's the actor and he's like making fun of the papyrus?
From Avatar.
Yeah, from Avatar. I think it's like Ryan Gosling, and he's like, it's just this epic dramatic thing about it. Dude, the other thing I really want to dive into here, and it's fun talking about strategy together, because we kind of gone different pathways in life. And, you know, would you say that, like, how would you define your approach to working in this space? Would you classify yourself as an agency? Like, what, how do you kind of define that for yourself?
Yeah, so I run Just Creative, which is an agency. That's how I brand myself. Mm-hmm. But it is mainly me doing the work. So it's not like an agency where I have, you know, employees like you have.
Yeah.
It is set up to look and appear like a small studio agency, but mm-hmm. you work directly with myself.
Yeah.
So that's how I've set up my brand. And there's many different ways to do it.
Yeah.
My personal brand and my business is the same brand. There's pros and cons of that. Yeah. You know, having a personal brand and a separate business.
What might they be for you?
Yeah, so the pros are that you can build one brand. You don't have to build two separately. The cons is that they are together. So there's some mix of like personal and business that comes into a stream, and some people may resonate with that, others may not. Like some people may not want to see family photos, for example. So for me, it's like finding this balance of like, it's me, but it's also, you know, a professional business brand. So there's definitely pros and cons of that. So
Have you found it tricky, like sometimes where like you've had, because I imagine you're on every call, you're taking all the briefs, you're doing all the copywriting, you're developing the websites, just like who else is contributing into?
Yeah, so I do everything, and I really enjoy that process. I sometimes work with programmers for the tricky stuff.
God damn it, I admire that so much, man. That's awesome, dude. Yeah, you're like, I'm mastering the whole game. Yeah,
yeah. So I have a very wide set. It's like that's part of my position. It's like you can do everything. You know, under one roof.
Yeah.
You know, can do strategy to launch webs, like the brand to the website, even marketing material. So
yeah.
I work closely with, you know, consultants and entrepreneurs that are generally single business, small business owners, and help them, you know, build their brand.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that.
Yeah. So what would you say the strengths of that approach is for those that are listening and considering a similar approach for themselves?
It's more simple. You have more freedom. It's kind of like a lifestyle business.
Yeah.
So I was a heavy traveler before I had three kids.
Yeah, the same too. When you have kids, you don't travel anywhere most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was doing the digital nomad thing for about 3 years and doing like that kind of lifestyle. So that
you were business, like in Africa, you were like traveling all over.
Yeah,
the
I went
world,
to 90 man. Countries. So it was a huge trip.
I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah, 88 actually.
Jeez, so, man. So. Yeah. What were some of the favorite places that you traveled?
Oof. South Africa is a big one. We went back there a few times. Just amazing scenery and animals and
so you're like lifestyle. A big Sahara trip and all the rest of it. Yeah,
yeah, good fun. Costa Rica adventure was good fun.
Yeah,
I love the States. Like, there's so many different places in the States. All the different, states in the States.
Right. Okay.
Like, they all have different vibes.
Yeah.
Obviously, lived in New York for 5 years, so there's a bit biased there. But
yeah. Dude, I love people from New York. Like, I remember one time Ellie, my fiance, came in and I got off a call from someone in New York, and she's like, I heard you were arguing with someone. I was like, no, that's just how you talk to people in New York.
They're loud and they say how it is. They're no beating around the bush.
That's cool, man. So when you were traveling like the digital nomad, were you finding like inspiration when you were doing design work? Like, were you just working off a laptop, man? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, I was working on a laptop, and there was some crazy places I worked, like on a mini bus walking, like going down a mountain, like rocks going everywhere, and like I'm like, I have to get this project done.
You're like but trying to click and drag something, you know, completely it's going fucks everywhere. Up. Yeah.
Yeah. But if anyone's read 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, like a lot of the principles I use for the travel. So I traveled for about 3 years doing the digital nomad thing, doing working 4 hours a day, not a week, but 4 hours a day.
Wow.
So I'd work in the morning. I'm super productive in the morning. So that was my routine, do four hours a day, then do like the sites and everything. And and when we're all traveling from location to location, like at airports, I'd be working. So it was kind of this like, it just worked.
Yeah.
And I started to earn more money than what I was in New York because I could spend more time on my business and grew it. So I was only going to travel for a year doing this digital nomad thing, but it turned to three because I was just working.
That's beautiful, man. I bet you can't wait to start traveling again when the kids are a bit older.
Yeah, it's going
to
be wild.
Okay, cool. So you would say like you love the sense of freedom. You love the ability to kind of go do things as you want. What would be some of the other maybe project-oriented benefits of kind of flying solo and doing everything like you're doing?
What do you mean by project?
So like, let's just say you're working with a client, you're designing a logo, you're doing the copy, you're building the websites. Do you feel like a better sense of creative control over the project from front to end? Does a client like that it's just one individual that they're working with? Like what are the other benefits of kind of approaching it this way?
Well, the benefits for me is that, yeah, you have creative control, as you mentioned, yeah. And you can see the project from start to finish. And I love working with brands that don't exist. So you get to work with, starting with their name and, you know, working out their offers and just all that stuff that you don't think about as a business owner. Mm. And it's just so difficult to get off the ground. It's like there's so many pieces that you have to put together to build a brand. And, you know, I love helping people do that.
Yeah.
And you can work closely with them.
Cool. Yeah. So you get maybe the biggest rush out of full creation.
Full creation, yeah. And satisfaction for launching a project is a big part of it.
Yeah. Do you kind of like, you're like a cheerleader on the sideline, like, yeah, you're doing it. You know, like I love those projects where you literally work with someone from scratch.
Yes.
It's like, I just quit my job. Here's my life savings. Like that kind of thing. Yep. That's my favorite. And then not to take someone's life savings, that sounds horrible, but I never condone anyone to do this, but it's happened a few times where we're like, maybe you shouldn't come on board. And they're like, we want to. And it's like, okay, you do the name, you do the logo, you create everything, and then you see them crush it. It's the best feeling.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I've seen it go the other way as well. Like you do everything and you they just don't launch, or they get stuck in their job. They can't pull the trigger that you've built everything from them for them. Like the name to the website and all the identity and everything. And then, you know, something happens in their life. They like continue working for their company. They just don't pull the trigger. They don't get over the line. And that's sad to see.
That's the brutal one, man. Yeah. And that's some of our favorite projects where we're like, we smashed it. This is going to become a unicorn billion-dollar company, no doubt. And then it's like, doesn't launch. You're like, what's going on, guys? Yeah. They're like, oh, something happened. We went bankrupt, whatever it is.
Yeah, there's always... always something.
Yeah. Do you have another one where you're like, want to redeem yourself? Like this one where I did like this big, like financial loan company and we killed this thing. Like we did custom typography, like everything, you name it, we crushed it. And then it just never launched. Yeah. And I was like, I want to do that with another brand.
Well, this, to be honest, as creators, we create so much that doesn't get seen.
Yeah. That's a good point.
We create multiple concepts per client and it never sees the light of day. Mm. So I don't think it's necessarily about like it being a failure because we have so much stuff that doesn't get seen. So it's just, like, I guess, a different way of looking at it. It's like, well, we did it, but it didn't launch. But like, think about how much else we haven't launched and no one's seen it.
Yeah. But has there ever been one of those projects where you're like, I'll buy it and do it? Like, it's such a good idea.
I'll buy it and do it.
Like, you know, when you create a brand and you don't see it take off, be like, the idea is so good. Maybe I'll put a bit of money in that and like launch it myself. You know what I mean?
Oh, right.
I've had a few of those where I'm like, oh, they don't want to launch it, but I kind of want to
sign an NDA.
Yeah. I would never do that, but you know what I mean? So, okay. So you like the freedom in the sense of like being able to have the full creative control. And then what's the benefit for the client in your situation? Do you think that there's a big portion of the market that loves that front to end, one person's doing the whole thing approach?
Well, you get the contrast, right? If it's within the agency, often there's a manager who's like in between and has to, you know, relay everything to certain people. So you're often paying more for agencies because you have to pay for multiple people. So there's this sweet spot in the middle where you know, if you're positioned in a way that you're the one individual but a little bit higher caliber, it's a little bit different to working with the agency. They're going to charge a little bit more, but you have a wider team. You may be faster or maybe slower actually because there's a team, but it depends on the studio, I guess.
Right.
So there's definitely pros and cons for both. How I position my brand or some of the benefits, or like when someone asks like why me, I do talk about, well, everything's under one house. You get to work one-on-one with myself. You're not paying for interns. You're not paying for creative directors.
Right.
So you get that one-on-one experience. And yes, it may take a little longer because I'm doing it all myself, but you don't have to spend time trying to find certain, like a web developer or like a copywriter. I do it all.
So. Yeah. So what would you say your X factor in your pitch is? That like, it's going to be thorough. I'm with you the whole time. We've just met each other. We have a lot of mutual respect and trust. Like I've got you. That's kind of the approach and the pitch to the position you take?
It depends on like why they've come to you in the first place or where they've come from.
Yeah.
So if they're just trying to get quotes from everyone or if they want you in particular, like that comes up early in the conversation. Yeah. So you have to understand where they are in their process. Like, are they just shopping around or do they want you and so forth? So it does, you kind of have to tailor that a little bit.
Yeah. And where do you find most of your like leads come in from? Is it?
Asked me a year ago, it was SEO.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's gone down the toilet recently. So,
dude, I think everyone's feeling it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So,
it's rough.
Since 2007, when I started, everything's been SEO mainly, like I'd say 70%, mm-hmm. and the rest are word of mouth, social media, and yeah, that's it really.
Yeah. And what are you putting your attention into now? Because everyone's talking about like, you got to be on social media, you got to be doing this and that. Like, do you have any other techniques other than SEO that you're trying to, you know, exploit at this point in time?
Yeah. So tapping into my clients' networks.
Okay.
So, and also asking for their referrals and drumming up repeat business from prior clients. Just gotcha. Checking in with them. How are you going? You know, what's your challenge right now?
Oh, so like touching back out touching to a client that you previously worked with. How you going? Just checking in.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, understanding what their roadblocks are. Like if you notice, like you said, you're going to do this, what happened? And then you get on a call and it's like, well, I'm just fearful. I don't have the resources or this, like there's often just a mindset problem. So it's like coming in, it's like, well, you know, I can put a content plan together for you, or we can look at this. We can look at your sales funnel. So it's often about marketing at that point because I've already set up the identity for them. So often it's like, well, how do we amplify this brand? We've built it now. How to get people here?
Yeah. And that's a good point, because once the brand is built, doesn't mean it, you know, success.
Nope.
You know, this is the weird thing, because I think sometimes people reach out to branding agencies as, and this is the weird dichotomy I see in my head, is they look at a branding agency, go, you can make sure I sell stuff, right? And you're like, well, part of the puzzle like is building the strategy, the identity, the visual communication of your brand, then rolling that out, would you like, how would you define that transition period? I think for me and from my perspective, people get a little fearful, like, is it going to work? Is it worth all the resources? Like there's almost like a fear to jump kind of moment for people sometimes.
Yeah. And brand is such a long-term play.
Yes.
It's, you know, and they don't consistently show up, and that's the problem. So it's coming in, it's like asking why, what's the problem here? Where it's often lack of clarity or lack of resources or time is always the excuse. It's like, well, how much time could you dedicate to this? Could you consistently show up, say 5 hours a week or 10 hours a week? I know you have a full-time job, but can you do this? Can you show up? And getting them accountable for that and getting them some momentum, that's really, really important for some clients.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like giving them some clarity, some confidence, some support. And sometimes I think for our clients, it's like, okay, we built this sick brand. Now what? You know, it's like, now we're going to market it. And that's what we're working on now, is building that second phase of the agency where it's like marketing rollout, you know, ads activation, things like that. So that's going to be fun. But I think, yeah, most people, I guess in your position, you know, where you're doing a lot of stuff that might be like far too much, you know, creative work. Cause I think rolling things out is very resource taxing. Would you say, like, what, how would you describe that?
I don't want to do content creation.
Yeah. Neither dude. I'm with you, man. Yeah. Yeah. I tried that. That's, you know, for those of you that don't know, like I started my whole jam as a content creation agency, and that is brutal, man. Like, what's your opinion on it though? Like, why do you think content creation agencies don't really take off?
Content creation agencies, you mean?
Yeah, like, or even content creators, because I cut my teeth in it. And I know a lot of people that started there and they usually transition out.
Well, every client has their own thing, right? Like,
yes,
industry. So you have to kind of get up to speed with that industry, their knowledge and their point of view on it and their voice. And then you have to create content in their style. So it's just a bit of a grind, and it's very repetitive. It's like a production role.
Yeah.
And I don't love that. So this is a personal opinion, my personal choice.
And it's tricky. So like what I've started doing now is, I think my opinion is this, like if someone's running a company and it's having some form of success, they need to find a way in-house to do content rollout, my opinion. And I think what can get tricky is people misconstrued what content is. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to unpack that with you. Like, what is content marketing, right? So when you're writing a blog, sure, you can look at blog writing as a way to generate leads, but there is need to give some exchange of value.
Yeah, value is the key word there.
Yeah.
So understanding what's valuable for your audience is key. So what are they interested in? What are their problems? How do you connect with them? And that can help inform your content strategy.
Yeah. What do you think that it is that most maybe business owners don't quite initially engage with when it comes to that? Because I've had so many conversations where they go, where's the leads? And it's like, hang on a second, wrong form of thinking. Not to be too brash, but I would say that the first form of thinking is like, how do I give value? Mm-hmm. Then the second form of thinking is like, okay, what's my thing, right? Because you can't just go, all right, well, I've got, you know, my brand's Prime. I'm just going to take a photo of this bottle and upload that. I would debate that that's not even content marketing. Mm-hmm. To me, that feels like an ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. How would you define your definition of what content marketing is beyond the exchange of value? Because some people can't even really understand and roll that out.
Another way to think about it is you're trying to build trust and you're trying to build your authority. And how you do that is by putting out value and creating that connection with the customer. You know, are you educating them? Are you entertaining them? Are you providing value in any way? So that's it. So
yeah.
I don't know how else to unpack that.
No, that's a good point. I think the only maybe way to go even more granular is maybe some real world examples. So one that comes to mind for me is like Red Bull. You'll never see a product photo of like just a Red Bull can on a shelf or something like that. You'll see and experience some form of entertainment. Someone jumping out of a plane, someone doing a backflip on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Something. What do you stand for? What do you stand for?
Yeah, sorry, my Siri's going off. But like, yeah, like what do you stand for? What's important to you? And like, what's the experience you kind of want to permeate? And I think so oftentimes businesses try to go straight into please buy from us versus like, hey, let's actually hang out and let's try to make you feel some kind of way about what we do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well said. Dude, and then when it comes to, I guess, blog writing, do you still see a avenue of success in the future for that? Or do you think that it's changed or disrupted too much? What's your opinion on the future of that?
I'm still bullish on content writing for blogging or, you know, articles online through SEO. So the value there is that it's evergreen, right? If you can create content, it lives on your site. It doesn't always have to be found by search. It could be someone that's found you through social and then gone to your site and then found your content.
Yep.
So it's another way to build trust with the customer. So let's say you had a resource on your blog. It's like, you know, how to get started with branding. And they read that. It's like, oh, you're an authority in branding. And then you have like a lead magnet that they can enter their email, and then they get into your email list and they learn from you more. So this is like funnel that helps them learn more about brand and also educate them on your services and how you can help them. So that's how I see, you know, blogging working as well. It's not just search. It's like this authority trust building game.
Yeah. And do you find like there's a certain amount of time someone spends with your content before they predominantly reach out?
I'm sure there's studies around this, like how many times people interact. People throw around numbers. I don't know what the real number is, like 80, I don't know. Like maybe something like 15, I guess, is how many times people have to see you interact with your content to trust you, I guess.
Yeah, very cool, man. Okay, and then at what point, the second agency that you said you worked at, was it straight after that you started to travel and work for yourself?
Yes. So 5 years was there. So I was at one agency, the first one, 6 months.
6 months and then.
And then I worked 1 year through a recruiting agency. So I worked in startups and was doing like 3-4 month contracts.
Yeah.
And then I found the one I stayed at for 4 years.
Yeah. Cool. Yep. And then you were like, I'm killing it with this moonlighting thing.
I'm burning the candle. That's right. Like you work hard and play hard in New York and
Okay, I got a weird question for you. This is my favorite. We try to fit this in every episode. And that is, what is the weirdest thing that you've ever done to make money?
I've blown up like balloons. I had to dress up as an angel.
Wait, when was this?
This was like 16, 17.
Okay,
so I had to give out balloons at like a shopping mall.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a one-off gig, never doing it again.
How did you get the gig?
Just a random friend. Just okay. Like, yeah, someone fell out of something like, can you cover? And I was like, okay.
Yeah, okay, cool, man. Well, okay, like diving into your childhood, what led you into this? So my question for you is this, do you think that, and I'm interested in like knowing people's opinion on this, do you think like creativity is inhibitual or do you think it's like something that's like a muscle that's developed?
I think that it's part of some people, like, you know, some people gravitate to science and some towards creativity.
Right.
Like just looking back at my past, like I hated science. I hated anything in that realm.
Same.
And I think, you know, in our DNA, it's there. I'm a creative at heart and, you know, that's me.
Yeah. So you could, like, as far back as you can remember, like as a kid, you were kind of always in the creative stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Art, design. I didn't really even know what graphic design was for a career until I saw my career advisor.
Yeah.
And they told me about that. I'm like, okay, that's where I'm going. And that's when I signed up to uni.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I always thought like as a kid, cause I kind of picked up learning how to use Photoshop on those online forums I was telling you about. And in one of the gaming forums, in a subsection of that forum, they had like a graphic community.
Mm.
And I remember being 13 and I was playing like Command & Conquer Generals, and then I joined this like online gaming clan jumped in the forum, created an account, all the rest of it. And I was like scrolling through it one day when I was like 12 or 13. I'm like, graphic design. That was when I was like, what's that? Clicked on it. And then there was this whole sub community of people that would just design stuff. And back then it was usually like cutting out a video game character, changing the background, putting your name over the top of it and doing cool little signatures underneath the subheading of your forum account. So when you would post, you would have this beautiful little graphic motif. That's how I started. And I remember going home every day and sitting down and like designing one every day for like hundreds of days in a row. And that's how I learned layering and like text typography and all the rest of it. Was that experience for you when you were in uni? Were you kind of messing with these programs before that?
It was definitely high school. So
okay.
I think I was maybe 13, 14 when I first did a logo design. It was in Photoshop. It was for a death metal band.
Nice.
But I was also morphing people's faces together. So like I'd get school photos and then cut and paste people's faces and then join their names. So that was...
You were making memes before memes were a thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how I learned about Photoshop and
what did you have? I had a Windows 95 PC that I picked up from someone's driveway that they were giving away.
Just I had a home computer or computer like PC at school.
One of those big, big beige, boxes. Chunky things. And the screen was like, man, we're going back. And the screens weren't even flat. They were like a little bulb.
Yeah, they were like curved.
It's like designing in a light bulb. It was kind of weird. Cool, man. So you kind of picked it up messing around at school and figured out you were pretty good at it. And then people start requesting that of you or wasn't into career.
Yeah, no, people did. So the logo was one. So people just started to learn that I was doing design and they're like, oh, can you do me a logo? And I said, yes. And like, how do you do a logo? And then I learned web design. So one of my friends had started a website. He was a bit geeky and I was close friends with him. And that's how he taught me about, you know, IRC. No, is that it? Like the IRC, the chat channel.
Okay. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm listening.
Maybe I've messed that up. But anyway, it's like an ICQ as well. He got me into that and web design and how code worked. So this was all like mind-blowing stuff back then, but he knew this. So I was like, show me more. And then we started a website together where we'd host things like ringtones, for example. We download to your phone and like that was our site back then. And that's how we learned about it. And I learned a little bit from him and then I bought some books on how to, you know, do websites in Dreamweaver. And that was, that's how I learned a bit about design. And that's kind of how I led into interactive design, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool, man. And so it's just a natural progression of curiosity for you. Do you think like the barrier to entry now has like helped or hindered the industry?
Oh, helped. Like, oh man, I wish all this stuff was available back then. There's so much business advice and, you know, tutorials online and the tools are just incredible.
Yeah.
I wish it was now. Like AI, like, oh my God.
Yeah. Could you imagine being like 9 or 10 now, like, and just being like, I can design anything I want, just programming and coding into AI.
It's mental. It's really crazy, is mental. Man.
Yeah. So, okay, let's dive into that a little bit. Like, what's your opinion on the advent of AI and where our industry is going? Like, how do you foresee things changing?
I use it every day.
Yeah.
It's like ChatGPT and in Photoshop and it's, incredible. It's like, it's a productivity efficiency tool.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. Yeah. So I think it is the future. And if you're not using it, you're going to be left behind. There's a saying like AI is not going to take your job, but someone using AI will.
Yeah. Yeah. So how have you experimented bringing AI into your creative process?
So I've created a couple of custom GPTs.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more advanced, but for the basics, I use it from everything from idea generation to strategy, creating personas, naming, idea generation. Even in Photoshop, it's like generative fill, putting like adding or subtracting things with ease. That's how I use it. We can dive into more of them.
Yeah, man. I can imagine you getting one of those, what do you call those new Google things everyone's wearing at the moment?
Oh, the Apple ones?
Apple
Vision Pro, man. I got to get me one of those. I was watching... It's like this thing came out of nowhere. I'm like, I've seen all this content about it, but I could see you like the Minority Report designing all day with it, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
I saw something on Reddit where some guy's in a Cybertruck with one of those goggles on, like tapping away while the car's driving itself. Yeah. It's like, whoa, this is how far we're coming.
That's crazy, man. It's like, you know, those memes that are online where people are like on a laptop in a ridiculous situation. It's like the client has requested some changes.
Yes.
You know, I can see like that now where people are like out in public, like graphic designing as they're like doing other stuff.
Well,
you know
there's these videos going around of people on like the subway in New York. Like they got these on and like tapping and it looks like they're
typing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's exciting, man. I think, you know, like I guess growing up in today, today's day and age, I think it's thrilling for people to kind of look at our industry and go, what's, there's such fast progression. And I would debate that anyone who's trying to get into our industry right now has to be super nimble. They have to be very adaptive and they have to be very flexible to like adapting themselves to how marketing and how branding and sales and all of the rest of it is going to shift in the next 2 to 3 years. Mm. Yeah. Would you debate any of that though?
Yes. Like nimble, it just depends on where you are in your journey, I guess.
Right.
Because there's so much to learn, but you just have to know where you are on the journey and be okay with that. Like one step at a time, you're on your own journey. Like this social media, it's such a comparison game and you can right. get caught in that trap. Mm. So it's just like one step at a time. Where do you want to go? Explore, come back, explore somewhere else, and then create your own path and just be okay with it. But yeah, that's my take.
No, well said, man. I think, you know, you're right. And it's like, this is what I was coming back to. Like you've defined your journey into this industry as a vine. And I love what one of my friends, Vin Jiang, says this. And it's like, you know, like 1 + 9 = 10 or like 5 + 5 = 10 or 9 or 10 × 1 = 10. Like it doesn't matter how you get to 10. It's a matter of like figuring out your way to getting to 10.
Exactly.
So you found your way that works for you. I found my way that works for me. I love being surrounded by crazy people all day, every day. And I love like sitting in the strategy side of things and allowing a team to kind of drive the creative design. I'll sketch and I'll kind of ideate and I'll get laughed at by my team and stuff like that. But like, you know what I mean? I think we've found our own ways into the industry. What's your advice to someone who's listening to this, who's like, man, I really want to become a brand strategist and figure out how to get into the design space or into the creative space and do well for myself? Because a lot of people are out there trying to figure out how to get their first client, their first leg in the market.
Well, design and strategy are two different fields. I don't think you could jump straight to strategy first. I think there's, you have to have a good understanding of a lot of things, you know, like a breadth of skills, business, marketing, design, and how they all work together.
I agree.
To help, like in even in like terms of culture and how people interact and the behaviors and psychology, like there's a lot of principles that you need to learn to become a strategist. So I think you have to take it one step at a time and learn like a breadth of skills before you jump to that.
Yeah.
Design is a whole other field. So if you're studying design, then, you know, we kind of talked about our journeys back then, but yeah, it's a different approach.
Right. So your advice to someone would be if they're out of college, you know, try to go work for an agency, at least for a bit, pick up some skill sets and try to understand sales, understand marketing, understand the process, project management, all the rest of it. Don't just learn how to design. So to a designer out there, you're like saying, hey, go pick up other skills.
Yeah, it's not enough to be a designer anymore. It's really not, because it's become so commoditized and accessible. Mm. A lot of people can design with, you know, tools like Canva or even AI now.
Yeah.
So we have to bring more value to the table, and how we do that is by asking better questions, becoming a partner with the business owner and helping them grow their business, not just design.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a different way of thinking.
Awesome, man. I appreciate that insight. And to bring today's conversation to a close, man, like what's something that you would leave someone who's kind of freelancing with to get their first client, to get their first win, their first run on the board? What general advice would you give someone who's trying to go out there and get their first batch of clients?
First, you have to understand your offer. What value do you have that you can offer to someone? What are your offers? You know, is it web design, logo design, identity, strategy? What is it? So knowing that is important. Like, how can you help someone?
Mm.
Then you have to understand who you're going after. How can you find them? How can you connect with them? You know, and if you listen to what they're trying to do and you understand their problem, you're going to have an easier time selling to them, because you're not actually selling, you're just helping them. And if you understand their problem truly and you can help them get them where they want to be, that's how you're going to make a sale.
Yeah.
But you have to make those connections. But to do that, you have to know what value you can bring and where to find them.
Mm. Yeah, rather than trying to do too many things at once. Like, would you say to someone that they should probably kind of really pick something that they're amazing at and just kind of start there?
Well, you may not necessarily be amazing at it if you're starting, but that's how you get experience.
Yeah.
But even if you don't have a client, you can work on fake projects, and that's how you build your portfolio. That's how you get skills.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't think that you have to have a client to grow your experience.
Just get out there and start working and figuring some stuff out. Because I think a few of my first projects were free projects.
Yeah. Everyone started from nothing.
Yeah.
You have to build up a portfolio.
So, yeah.
And one other thing to end with is just share where you are in your journey. You know, looking back on my career, everything I've shared is based on what I'm learning at the time. So whether it be, you know, logo design at university or billboard design, I was just putting my work out there and that got the attention of others. You have to share your work. You have to be seen.
Good point.
If you don't get seen, like, how are you going to get found? How are you going to get those leads?
And I would agree with that. I think often some of the conversations I have with people is they're like, I only want to put out my best possible work. And weirdly enough, some of the work I've put out early on in my career when I was doing design still was like, you know, people would, I would be like not super thrilled with a project, but I would just share it anyways. And like, even till this day, some of the compliments I get is like, oh, I reached out to you because of this project you did. I'm like, man, I did that ages ago. I can't believe you liked that. You know, like, I think sometimes we can be our own worst critic and that can get in the way of us sharing our work.
Yeah, and people are looking for a certain thing. It could be in their industry or a certain style or something clever or whatever it is that they're looking for, and it could be in your older work.
Yeah.
But you did get hired for what you put out there.
Yeah. Awesome advice, man. How can people reach out to you, connect with you, you know, dive into some of your content? I know you've got different programs and offerings that you've got. Like, how can people meet and find you on the web?
All right. So Jacob Cass, that's my name, but my brand is Just Creative. So you can go to justcreative.com. On there, you'll find pretty much everything linked to all my profiles. But there's one thing I do want to mention. It's the branding briefcase, which I offer. It's a bundle of goodies that you can download for free. It has a bunch of brand strategy things in, logo design, mock-ups for designers. There's a ton of resources in there. It's all free in exchange for an email address. That's all. And yeah, all my blog articles and podcast is on there. I have run a branding podcast as well and a community for designers too. So yeah,
you'll follow. You do a lot, man. And I love that about you. And you contribute a lot to our community. Some of the people in the office here were freaking out that you were here. They're fans. And, you know, I think, you know, thank you so much, man, just for bringing a lot of value to our community at large. And a lot of people look up to you, as do I, and constantly learn from you. So thanks for that.
Thank you. And thanks. Back at you, man.
Hey, thanks. Yeah. Man. Thanks for being here, dude. Appreciate it. Cheers.